Welcome to the PLL Happy Hour. We are going into week three of the Premier Lacrosse League season on Long Island. One of the great spots for lacrosse, Hofstra Stadium, is awesome to catch lacrosse in. So if you are in the Long Island area, go to these games because it's going to be awesome. If you are at home, watch on ESPN Plus and on ABC Network Television this weekend for the Saturday game between the Archers and Cannons. This is going to be fun, guys. Just like we started every week, what are you guys drinking right now? We'll start with you, Dan.
I am riding the wave with the Kona and the Big Wave drink. These have been in my fridge for about, I think, since last summer. Like a cookout we had last summer, someone came, brought them, left them. I threw them in the fridge, and they've just been sitting there for this exact moment, waiting for the happy hour with you guys.
Nice. Well, the leftover found beer in the fridge is the best kind of beer. Kevin, what's up with you?
I also have leftover found beer, but it's the same beer as last week, and that it's Bud Light.
Wait, you've been drinking the same beer for a week?
Not quite, but we'll pretend so.
Yeah, I've got my first time having this. It's not that great. I don't really love it. Goose Island, it's a hazy beer hug. Hazy IPA is what it's called.
Cool can.
Yeah. Basically,
how that's much can have to do with the purchase.
Well, I basically go and I get a six pack of an IPA basically every time I go to the liquor store. And I don't I'm not one of those people who's going to spend like $17 on a six pack of beer. So I stick to from the $10.99 to the $12.99 range. And I just pick something new in that range every time.
You ever go to one of the spots where you do a create your own six pack?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I, my tasting.
You need to go full
six pack. I need a six pack to get it. Do I like it or not? I don't know. I can't just do one and then, because then you get disappointed if you find one you like and you move on to the next one. And I need the consistency in my beer.
I think you should try and finish all six while we're talking.
It's happened before on this podcast. I'm going to need it because just got back from the carnival with the kids. Next week, I'll be on vacation with 8 kids, 7 and under, out in the Outer Banks. So I might join in next week, even though I'm on vacation, just to get an hour away from all of that. But let's talk about the games because they're going to be awesome. And I think there's just a lot of, it's week three. So there's always the overreaction, underreaction, sky is falling for some teams. Some teams look unbeatable, but it's still only week three. They've only played 2 games. So, it's kind of one of those I think we have ideas of what the major storylines of the season are. I don't think we know for certain what they are. But we're going to kick it off with this week with, what is your storyline of the week? And Kevin, we're going to shoot it to you first. Looking at these matchups that we have and the kind of looking around the league, what's your storyline right now in PLL?
My biggest storyline so far through the first opening 2 weeks is the Whipsnakes' ability to win while still playing pretty poorly. They admitted as much after their overtime win against the Water Dogs. And it really comes through their experience in playing these close games. The first 3 seasons of PLL existence, they've got their core unit all kind of, they've gone through the battles together and they've come out the other side. So, once they get Zed Williams back from the Mammoth and the Game 3 of the NLL Cup Finals to be played in a raucous bandit land, they'll be more complete. And they're kind of holding the fort down until he gets back. So it's it feels like one of those seasons where the Whipsnakes can do no wrong. So they're coming off a season where it felt really disappointing in almost every game they played, and they still came up just a few goals short of winning it all. So now that they are winning and playing bad. It's only a matter of time, presumably, that they turn around and kind of figure things out.
Dan, you're probably the best X's and O's guy on this call right now. Zed Williams comes back. What do you do with that, you know, Zed, Jay Carlson, Justin Gutterding, Matt Rambo, you know, Jackson Reed, you got a Slaney in the mix there. How do you adjust from where you are now to where you are when you have Zed? Because Zed's obviously a guy you build around.
Yeah, so thanks for the shout on the X's and O's, by the way.
You're the only guy who's actually a coach. So,
well, the very first thing I thought of, and it kind of shows you my programming, though, Kevin brought up, like, edging out close games, and I'm like, well, like, yeah, they have the best coach in the PLL. So, like, yeah, they are edging out games like that. Like, that shouldn't be that surprising. And so I think that's a big part of it. But when they come back, and you can listen for them when they talk, and you go inside the huddle with them all the time, but they talk about these slam picks, and when you can do them to either side instead of just to the left hand, now the defense is that much more multiple, and you don't know defensively which short stick is going to end up being involved in the play. Whereas, like, essentially as the offense starts, we basically know whichever short stick is over on the same side as Rambo is going to be involved in the pick play. So, like, you can basically be talking through it as soon as the defense is, like, taking their spots. But if you have that option on both sides, like, now you have to defend the pick play more in the spur of the moment. And most of the times it's Zed, who on every other team is a number one dodger, guarding, like, going at somebody else's number two cover. So in those moments, too, it's going to be really dangerous. The thing I'm not totally sure is who they used to two-man with him over there on the righty wing. On the lefty side, I think we'll see a lot of Jackson Reed and Rambo over there with the double lefty. Where that, you know, if they play that defense really well on the pick play with Rambo coming off and they throw back to Reed now in that corner, like, he's plenty capable with that left hand in that spot. I don't know exactly who they're going to do that with the right side over there. They can't do it with Carlson because it'll be pull and pull. So somebody who's going to get short stick that can go over there and work with him. It'll be interesting. I believe it was Halls in the past, which is why I say I'm not exactly sure who it'll be in the future.
Why, I agree with you, but why do you say that Stagnita is the best coach in PLL?
I think that the biggest thing with coaching in the PLL is more so, like, less about X's and O's, less about like camaraderie, and more about, like, being a really good motivator and keeping a bunch of men that, you know, seemingly would come in with, like, egos, keeping them in line and playing humble and, like, for each other, I think is a harder task than we give the PLL coaches credit for.
Well, and I think, Kevin, I think back to the story you wrote about Matt Rambo. I think it was two seasons ago, or maybe the beginning of last season. And, you know, Rambo basically credits Stagnita a lot of it with, you know, the way he, I don't know if kept him in check is the right way to put it, but, you know, the way that he kind of pushed him and, you know, motivated him. And, you know, I do think he is the best coach in the PLL. And when you talk about that, the managing personnel aspect of it, I'm going to jump in here with my storyline of the early part of the season and my storyline that's kind of going into week three here. And that is the Redwoods in terms of,
AKA, speaking of big egos, let's just talk about the Redwoods.
Well, no, that's the thing is, like, I like Nat, and I think he has a lot of that in him in terms of his ability to manage the egos, manage the personalities. You know, I get the vibe that he's gonna be kind of like a let the players work it out amongst themselves to some extent kind of guy, which maybe is what you need. Maybe it isn't, you know, maybe you need more of a top-down approach, but they're a team that looks like they're right now, they look like they're in shambles. And I know that, like, I don't know if it's a matter of circumstance or if it's a matter of something bigger, you know, with Rob Pinnell is not 100% right now. he's clearly not playing 100%. And, you know, every indication, everything we've heard is, you know, he's been kind of playing through injury. I know there's other guys on the team. Nat kind of hinted at it. He didn't say specifically who, but there's other guys on the team who are playing through injuries right now. You know, we've seen Perkovic, who's been hurt. And, you know, is it just that? And that's why they're 0-2? Or is it just, you know, what we saw from that offense last week, which was some of the worst offense we've ever seen in the PLL? You know, I know it's a few short seasons, but that was just some rough stuff that we saw. Is that a sign of something bigger, that this team is going to kind of have a compounding factor where, you know, you lose a third game to a team that is a beatable team? They're playing the Chaos this week. Do things start to really spiral out of control if you're the Redwoods and you go 0-3 this week? You go 1-2, you beat, you know, a team that, like I said, it's a winnable game, but they aren't the defending champions. You win that, you get healthy. Are you back, you know, in 2 or 3 weeks in that conversation of one of the top, you know, 2 to 3 teams in the league? It doesn't look like that right now. But like I said at the beginning of this podcast, it's still so early in the podcast, still so early in the season to make any rash judgments. So the status of them long term is really what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, and it's concerning in the fact that they let their offensive struggles compound into the rest of the field, with TD Erlin has struggled in both games out of the gates. Tim Trautner, we heard Ryan Kern, last week's guest, break down that his performance was a little disappointing in the first week, and it certainly wasn't too much better, though his offense didn't give him too much help in the second week. But they do need to find some answers offensively in terms of who's going to fill these roles, which seemed a lot more clear-cut last season in terms of who's going to be cutting to away, who's going to be filling the lanes, going to the crease in terms of, you know, like the primary initiators aren't really stepping up, with Rob Pinnell pulling up after a couple minutes into the season. So it's all really compounding into this big mess. And we'll see with Chaos still missing their core, if they can get one. But
Nick Osello, the former Redwood, you know, had some interesting words in his column this week that I think people should check out. A little bit of insider knowledge of the team, and you know, he kind of took it to him a little bit. And the advanced stats, you know, Joe Keegan with the PLL shared some advanced stats with us today, and the league does such a good job of, you know, kind of cataloging anything you'd want to know. The advanced stats, you know, tell a pretty dire story for the Redwoods right now. You know, in terms of, you know, offensive, one thing, offensive transition stats. You know, this is kind of a stat that the PLL has. Shots created is 4 for the Redwoods. The next worst team is 8. So that's a lot of stuff that they need to kind of work on right there. But we'll stop this discussion right now, because I think we got a special guest.
How are we doing, guys?
Asher and Olkey, how are we doing?
Good, good, good. I just got back from running a showcase all day. Sorry for the delay.
No need to apologize. We were getting fired up. How was the showcase?
Oh, that's a long day. That's a long day out in the sun, but it was good. It was good. Got some good coaches, got some kids some looks, so it was good.
Well, Asher, thanks for joining us. You know, late notice and late on a Thursday night here, especially after a long day in the sun, so we really appreciate it. And know you got a big weekend coming up. So we'll just fire away some questions at you and keep you for a few minutes, and you can be on your way. We were just talking about some of the storylines for the year. And I know the kind of the storyline in your life right now, in terms of your pro lacrosse debut, you talked about a few weeks ago, playing with Lyle Thompson. I think any of us who's on this call right now, that's kind of a dream come true. What is it like for you playing with Lyle?
Yeah, no, like you guys said, I think, you know, anyone that grew up kind of watching that lacrosse in that era, you got to see that guy perform at the highest level. Whether it's pro, but obviously at Albany, that's where everyone was like, this guy's pretty special. So it's been an absolute pleasure and a dream come true, like I said a couple times. But, yeah, no, I mean, I can't – it's hard to describe, it's hard to put in words. I think if you would have told, 13-year-old me, you'd be on the same team as Lyle Thompson someday, I probably would have laughed at you and been like, yeah, whatever. But, yeah, no, it's been pretty special.
And you know, I think some of the – you had some words that I thought were really interesting where I forget exactly what you said, but you said, I'm a competent lacrosse player. You know, what did you think of people maybe, like, limiting your skill set in terms of what you can do? You know, can you play off ball and things like that?
Yeah.
When you
– No, I think, you know, I think
– Mainly me, maybe.
No, I wouldn't even – it wasn't just you. I think, you know, for me, I think, you know, a lot of people – I think draft night was a tough night for me for a lot of reasons. I think, you know, not because I don't think any of the guys that were taken in front of me are unbelievable players. I think they're all great. But I think, you know, I think you have to personally think that you're the best player. And I always truthfully think I'm the best player until I met Lyle, to be fair. So I think – I've always thought I was the best player in the field, and I've always thought that. And I think that's the mindset that helped me a lot. The coach Torpy helped me a lot develop it at High Point. But, yeah, no, I think people kind of pegged me as the guy that needed to be ball dominant, and that's not really who I am. It's what High Point needed me to be. And I was fully in on that role and whatever we needed to do to win and for us to win at High Point. It involved me having the ball a lot of the times and generating offense. So, for me, you know, I've never really thought that, you know, I was a one-trick pony, but, you know, I'm dead. Like I said, I'm a confident lacrosse player. I know how to play. I know where to go in certain situations. I know how to move off ball. I know, you know, how to play lacrosse. So I think, yeah, that was it was good to kind of get that off my chest a little bit.
No, it was super fun to watch too. The opening week, you bury the turnaround jumper, which I thought was really indicative of your ability to find space and kind of neatly convert off ball. And then the following week, Lyle goes down with an upper body injury, and then you kind of resume the ball dominant nature when, frankly, you guys did have the ball, which was a little sparingly throughout that Atlas game. But you showed off a couple slick assists and showed off both sides of, you know, the arsenal that you can bring to the Cannons offense. So I thought that was really neat. And when I was doing so first off, the polarizing players and the prospects for the draft was not indicative of your talent level. It was just where coaches were maybe seeing you in terms of the draft. And I will be the first to admit that I totally overlooked the fit with the Cannons and Coach Sean Quirk. Obviously a big fan of you now, but when Lyle is healthy, I think we'll make a lethal tandem and kind of using those two-man games and everything. But just how cool has it been just to transition to the pro game in general and kind of showcase everything you can do?
Yeah, no, just to go off that article real quick, Coach Tor, I think we were on a bus trip and Coach Torpy sent me this. Like this, he's like, yeah, I won't say that, but he's like, mother, he's like, I'm, he's like, show them wrong. And I was like, I got it. And I was like, I don't take that stuff too personally. I understand where it's coming from, but yeah, no, the transition's been awesome. Obviously it's been different, you know, not practicing with the team every day and being with the guys all the time, but the times that we do have together, it's been awesome. I love all the guys on our team. It's a good group. You know, the addition of Bubba is huge. I think he's going to be a huge part for us this year in our success. And, you know, I think, you know, we got a decent, you know, core group of guys that can win a lot of games in this league. And, you know, if we get hot at the right time, there's a lot of teams that probably won't want to see us. So I'm excited.
All right. So I'm kind of going to piggyback off of that. So just to set the table for this question a little bit, I'm in the chat here with two big J's, but think of myself more as a washed up coach that happens to hang out with a bunch of big J's now. So for you, if you had your way for the rest of the season, would you like to come out of the box with a short stick and go, you know, two-man and play with Lyle on the wings? Or would you rather be, you know, asserted down at attack and
don't give us any team first answers either?
Say that again, Kev.
Don't give us any team first answers either.
After first answers here. That's what the spot's all about.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, for me, I think I'm sorry, I don't want to give you guys team first answers, but that's kind of my mindset with this whole thing and this process has been, you know. Court gave me that call draft night and it was awesome. I was super excited and I just said, you know, whatever you need me to do, I'll do it. I mean, whatever it is, running out of the box, playing behind, whatever. So again, for me, obviously I'm most comfortable down low. I think that's, you know, been my career for the last 5 years, obviously at High Point and then before that at Cherry Creek. But, you know, I think that's tough to say for me. I've surprisingly enjoyed running out of the box more than I thought I would. So, you know, I'd love.
So, you know, that's the correct answer. The correct answer is always get guarded by short sticks.
Yeah, no. I think for me, I think, you know, I've always liked that abuse. I've always liked getting whacked on by a pole. So it was good to get that back this week. So, but yeah, no, I think, you know, running out of the box and playing two-man game with Lyle has been unbelievable. So I definitely probably have to say that.
Well, all getting right. Whacked by a pole, you actually took it. So Michael Rexrow just shut down Lyle in like both games, I think, last season, and then he tried to V-hold you and you just totally got topside and were like,
yeah,
fired it offside hit.
Yeah, he's strong. I hadn't faced a defender. I mean, I think that's what I've noticed so far. I mean, at training camp and then at obviously these first couple of weeks, these dudes are a little different than high. These are a little different than, you know, maybe the occasional sophomore or junior that I used to get guarded by at school. So these are grown ass men. So it's been fun to go against. It's been challenging for me for sure. It's been different. I've been trying to find different ways, you know, to get to my spots and do all that stuff. And, you know, I think, you know, just week to week going by it and figuring out how to be successful is definitely the biggest key for me there.
Asher, you know, Coach Torpy, you know, had the description that's been said on ESPN a bunch of times. He described you as like Magic Johnson out there. Who's a pro athlete that it doesn't need to be a lacrosse player, but just a pro athlete that you most admire?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I mean, just due to my dad, I think, you know, that was his high school number 32, cousin Magic Johnson. I loved him. I loved watching those highlights growing up. Obviously, some of the off-court stuff, that's obviously not ideal, but the way he played basketball, I think, was just one of the things that I've always enjoyed, with just that pure enjoyment all the time and just having that, you know, childish, like, giddy about him and, like, just making plays and that stuff. So I've always tried to put that in my game. But, you know, right now, honestly, for me, one of my favorite athletes of all time is Roger Federer. I will always say that. I think that he has been, I mean, just the dominance, and he's just a machine on what he does. I think, you know, the preparation he puts in and all that stuff and just how he's just so consistent, how he's been so consistent for so long is something that I want to put into, you know, my career in sports and in life and just how he does things. It's been I grew up in a tennis household with my mom, and I can thank her for ruining tennis for me. She pushed me a little hard when I was young, and I was like, I'm done with this. So I thank her for that, because it worked out for me with lacrosse. But, I love tennis. I love watching tennis. So Federer, for me, is definitely one of the guys that I look up to. Sorry, what was that?
What did you say, Dan?
I thought you were going to go with the golfer, because, you know, I listened to your podcast with Pete Poyon, and you talked a lot about how, like, your golf experience has helped you in lacrosse. I thought that was one of the most fascinating things I've heard, you know, in an interview, lacrosse-related interview in the past year or so.
Yeah, no, obviously, well, there's a ton of golfers out there. I mean, growing up, I think I was Tiger Woods for, I'd probably say, like, 8 straight Halloweens, literally from, like, 8 years old on, or, like, 6 years old on, almost up to 14, because I was like, how can I not be this guy? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I'm a black kid that loves golf. Like, I want to be him so bad. And then I got the high school golf and I made JV freshman year, and I was like, man, maybe I'm not very good at this sport and I'm getting better at lacrosse, so maybe we kind of start leaning towards that way. And that's definitely where it took off. But yeah, no, I mean, for me, like I said in that Pete Poyon, that interview, just I think, again, with tennis too, that also helped, that mindset of just, like, you're out there by yourself, so you're going to make mistakes, and if that mistake's on you, you have to own up to it. And that's it takes a lot of accountability, and I think that's what helped me a lot with, you know, lacrosse, with golf. You hit a bad shot, It's not on the kid playing with you. It's not on the course. It's on you. And so I think that's another reason that maybe my turnover totals were a little high, because I was okay with that, the accountability being on me. But, yeah, no, that's definitely one of the mindsets that I had.
Any inspiration in the – so Shane, you show up to training camp and Shane Jackson's wearing 32. You get the number zero. Any inspiration in – that jersey number?
No, it was actually funny. We were looking, and I think like probably the night of the draft when I got drafted by the Cannons, my dad called the roster just to see who was on. We didn't really know much about it just because they were expansion. Obviously, we knew we had Lyle. And, you know, Ryan Boyle and Kark loved to point that out for me, that wasn't going to work out very well. So I appreciate them for that one as well. But, he looked and he's like, oh, Shane Jackson's 32. And I was like, well, I know Shane Jackson pretty solid, so I'm pretty certain he's going to be on the team for a little bit. So it's been funky. And so we looked and we're like, nine. Reese said he was nine at the time, so I was like, that was my high school number. And I was like, we'll keep looking. And then he's like, dude, what about zero? He's like, that's like the best number you could possibly pick. He's like, you're nobody anyways, so might as well be zero. And I was like, no, I'm all for it. So I picked it, and I'm loving it so far. But the minute Shane Jackson's gone, I'm probably going to take 32 back. I heard someone called him 32 the other day, and I like looked over and I was like, oh, that's not me anymore. I was like, oh, that's a weird identity thing I got to get over. I'm not 32 anymore, so I got to get over that.
Yeah, 5 years to do that, dude.
No kidding. I don't think I got called Asher for 3.5 years. It was always 32. I haven't been called my name in a long time. So sharing someone else be called 32, I was like, oh, this is going to take some time.
A little off topic here, but so the Avs are in the NLL final, or the NHL finals, yeah. The Mammoth won the NLL finals. Denver Hockey already won the national championship. What's going on with Denver
here? Tell me what, and then we got.
As soon as Asher becomes a pro athlete, all the pro teams start getting
champions. We got Mr. Unlimited. We got Russell Wilson here. The Broncos are looking good. The AFC is stacked. That's the only issue I have. But, great time to be a Denver sports fan. Except the one team that I love that just breaks my heart is the Rockies. I grew up a baseball guy kind of with my dad. And that team is just abysmal, and we traded Nolan Arenado away. I haven't been to a game since because of that just horrendous trade. But, yeah, no, big Denver guy. Avs game was going crazy last night. Huge win for the boys, and that percentage popped up. You know, 77% of the teams that win the first game win the Stanley Cup. So I think the city saw that and went a little crazy last night. So it was a tough morning for everyone, it seemed like, at work. So, but it was a good day.
Yeah, no, that was a super entertaining game. Give us a NLL Game 3 prediction here.
Oh, I got
Mammoth, the Bandits.
Mammoth all the way. Connor Robinson has a sock trick. Dylan Ward makes some crazy amount of saves, and the Mammoth come out of Buffalo victorious. I think I can speak for a lot of guys that are on my team that play box. I think everyone's rooting for the Mammoth tomorrow. So I think that's
the consensus. The Chaos Boys. They already won, so
yeah. You got yours. Let the Mammoth get this one, but I think they're going to steal it. I think that with that what weird loss in game one, I think they're going to come back and take one in Buffalo.
Got anything, Dan?
No. I appreciate you joining us after a long day.
Well, we got to talk about this week.
Yeah, we got to.
How cool is it that it's the ABC game?
Yeah.
I don't think lacrosse has been on ABC since I remember watching locally here on ABC the Johns Hopkins games used to be on ABC Baltimore back in the 90s. But ABC Cannons versus Archers, how awesome is that? You're gonna be national television, but also national network television. But then just the matchup with the Archers, what do you see in them?
Yeah, super talented team that we got to scrimmage in training camp. Defensively, they're top to bottom, they're a good team. I think, you could probably say that about every team in this league. I think that everyone's so talented, and I got to see that very early on in training camp. I got a lot of young guys on that team that I'm friendly with. Matt Moore, DeSimone, all studs. They're playing great. doing a lot of good things for them. I mean, I think it kind of depends. If Ament comes back, you know, that changes a lot of things for them and for us. And but yeah, same thing for them. I think if Lyle comes back, that changes a lot of things for us, for them as well. So yeah, no, I'm super excited. I think when Quirk sent in that thing, everyone was like, oh, 1 o'clock game on ABC. That's crazy. And so, yeah, no, I'm super excited. I got a bunch of my High Point guys. Some of them are coming down, so I'm super excited to see them. And it's going to be a good time in Hofstra.
Well, you mentioned Lyle there. Why don't you give the IL podcast some breaking news here? You got any status update?
You guys are in the clue as I am. I will show up to practice tomorrow, and he'll be there, and I'll find out at the same time you guys are. That injury report gets sent out, just like I did last week. I didn't even know that he was hurt until literally we got to the game. They're like, oh yeah, you're down at attack, and I was like, oh okay, that I guess that works. I'll make it work. Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah, nothing like getting thrown into the fire there. Nah. It'll be a big difference from going against Latrell Harris and going against Graham Hosick there. But
that's a matchup difference there. I mean, Latrell's one of the best teammates in the league, but yeah, Hosick's I got to see him in training camp. He gave me one right away. It was kind of a welcome to the league slap, and I was like, oh, there it is. I like that.
You're built for it, though.
Yeah.
We mentioned the Mammoth and everything. Would you be interested in a box career?
Yeah, no. I think I'm going to try both. I'm going to show up to training camp next year. Mammoth were gracious enough to draft me, the American kid that hasn't played a lot of box in his career. But, you know, I'm super excited for that. I almost had a chance to join them, you know, kind of in this playoff run. I wouldn't have been, you know, part of the roster, the active roster, but I would have been on the 19 or whatever it is for them. And yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was, you know, I'm super excited to be a part of that organization. If I get the chance, going to training camp, show up, got to buy box gear, got to wear a little bit more padding than I'm used to, but no, I'm excited.
Yeah. Cause guys like Rambo and Shriver, they've spoken wonders about the kind of the benefits the indoor game has given them to translate to the outdoor field, and
yeah,
you can kind of see the same thing happening for yourself.
But yeah, no, I hope so. I mean, that's definitely the thought of, you know, just continuing to play, working in tighter spaces, working with some of the best sticks in the world. I mean, yeah, they can't go wrong there.
Any other welcome to the league moments that stuck out from the opening two games?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think it was almost a welcome to the league moment. I was like this close. I'm like, this could be bad. I think we were Water Dogs first week, and I ran back getting in the hole. And I think it was either Burns or Reese, and he was wide open, like hunting a two. And I was like running up, and I was like, this is either going right in my chest and this could be it. And like, or this, I'm going to be the one on like the PLL post in like an hour of like, oh, like, right. I was like, please. And it was a bad pass, and he dropped it and it went out of bounds. I was like, oh, thank God. And so that was my almost welcome to the And then I think probably, you know, Rex Road last week said something to me, and I think I hadn't gotten knocked off my spot in a while. And he's like, yeah, this isn't high. He's like, not college anymore. And I was like, nah, you're right. I haven't gotten. So it was a couple welcome to the league moments, but no, it's been good. I'm super excited.
What was that? Was that the end line check that he had on you?
Yeah, he did get me there. It was funny. That's the other thing. No one throws checks in college really. So I've been like running, and people are throwing checks. I'm like, whoa, what's going on? Like, where did that come from? And I'm like, all right, now I got to go back to like high school me, where I'm like guarding it like it's, you know, my life depends on it. So it's been funny, but you know, it's been good.
That's amazing.
Well, I'm sure you testing out the 2-point range here soon. Yeah, this week, maybe this week.
That is a little outside my range. I will be inside that arc. If you take a shot outside that arc, it must be desperation time or some junk on that. If it goes in, you'll see a pretty hard celebration for me, because I got to camp and I was like, man, that's not that far. And then there was a goalie in, and then there was a defense, and I was like, oh, wait.
You just got that triple screen coming around the right wing there and get yourself up in the point.
Yeah, no,
Let one go.
I'll throw some hockey junk on it. Just put pucks on net and hopefully someone goes in and I'll get lucky. So we'll see.
There you go. Love it. Cool, man. Well, Asher, thanks again for joining the PLO Happy Hour podcast, and best of luck here going into week three and beyond.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. And yeah, glad to be on.
Thanks, Asher.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Appreciate it. You know, man.
Thanks for joining,
I should say.
What'd you say?
Thanks for coming.
Close enough. It is nice that he acknowledged just how much he not that he wanted to prove me necessarily wrong, but just the fact that he could do like other things. Like High Point asked him to do all of that because he had to. And it fits the narrative of like, oh, why didn't you transfer? Oh, why? Like, we thought you were gonna like go to like a bigger time school and that kind of stuff. And in which case, he would have had a diminished role comparatively.
Yeah, he's one of those players that, like, you know, he joked about his turnover numbers, and like, I feel like that stat haunted him his whole career. Like, people don't realize, like, he's such a good he had a million assists, and people don't realize that he's, like, this amazing feeder who can just body guys and then just dart a pass to, like, you know, to a spot the size of the ball. You know, he's an amazing player, and, you know, it's going to be a really fun – I picked him for Rookie of the Year last week, or I think 2 weeks ago. So, obviously, I think very highly of him. But, yeah, I mean, just that – physical tool set with that IQ and just that, you know, lacrosse and athletic sense that he has is going to be an awesome combination. And just listening to him, you know, he's dedicated to it. He's in it for the long haul, which is half the battle here in pro lacrosse. So happy to have him on here and, you know, looking for many glorious years from Asher Nolting going forward.
And paying it forward with the kids too.
Yeah.
Coming straight from the clinic, going straight to game week three. He did interrupt our storylines of the week, and I think Matt, you're wrapping up on the Redwoods there. Dan, do you have a storyline?
Is it Redwoods, you know, just to recap, is it Redwoods like complete downslide, or is it Redwoods just bad 2 weeks? And then Dan, I know you've got a good storyline that you're watching this week too.
Yeah, I think mine is kind of in that same boat that you were mentioning earlier a bit with Redwoods have, but injuries, and more so with the Water Dogs. You have Sabia injured down at close. You have DiNapoli on the pup list. You have Sowers out, obviously, and then you have Withers out at the faceoff back. So that's not just, you know, you have four dudes that, you know, were at the bottom of your roster that are out. You know, that's your alpha dog on the offense, and, you know, the guy that's supposed to be getting you possessions for your offense as well at the X. Those are two things that, like, both are going to have huge ripple effects. And I'm not exactly sure how they balance out, what they'll do. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see exactly when we get the list of who's active for this weekend to see, you know, what will kind of be that band-aid for this week. And hopefully it's a quick fix and Sowers is right back in the lineup. Not exactly sure the extent of his injuries. Do we know that, Kevin?
The extent to his injuries is not been made clear, but it'll be interesting to see.
But you know?
Nah, I don't know.
Well, the you know, it's interesting that, like, this is one of, you know, the injury storyline is pretty immense this week.
Yeah.
It's probably the dominant, just not by one team, but just the dominant overall storyline of the weekend is you got Sowers out. You got this questionable, you know, this ABC matchup. Asher just talked about it. You know, is Lyle going to play? Is Grant Amick going to play? Arguably the two best players in the league right there who we're not sure if they're going to play, you know, in the game's premier matchup on ABC. I don't know. Those guys are gamers. I got a feeling that, like, if they can be out there, they will be out there. You know, Grant is one of those players who was not part of the Team USA tryout process because of the injury, but he is like still in the pool of potential Team USA guys. It's just a matter of, you know, not going to work the guy who's injured right now in the middle of a season.
And he did post an Instagram story of him wearing cleats.
Yeah.
Blues.
So he did. Yeah, he did post a very vague story of him wearing cleats. That, you know, I feel like I was a little too hard on the Archers last week before the game, and then I watched Matt Moore come out of the box and just destroy people.
Well, and they did what we said.
Team Archers. But, like, can you imagine that team with a fully healthy Grant Amet?
Yeah.
Well, that's why we're so disappointed in their week one performance, because they do have a lot of weapons without Amet still. Like, Will Manny showed off the right hand and moved into ninth all time on the career points list. But, like, that wasn't the biggest story. You mentioned Matt Moore. I feel like he was the biggest story, his emergence from week one to week two to being a legitimate go-to initiator. Trey LeClaire had, like, a sick spin and score on the right wing. If he could be more assertive dodging-wise, and we know he can do stretching of defense, and Kaplan and I talked about this in the office, but that Schreiber two-point goal was pretty. Little spin around the screen and side armor to the top left. I've watched it on repeat every time I've seen it, and it gets better every time. So, I mean, they have so many weapons.
Definitely the closest thing we have in our sport to, like, Steph Curry off the dribble from three. Like, you set a pick, the defense plays it pretty well, and you still give up a three. Same thing there. Like, you can play pretty good defense against Tom Schreiber and still end up giving him a two. Like, sorry.
Yeah, he's – and, like, it's funny because, like, he – you know, if you kind of talk to him up close, you can see it. But he's a freak athlete. And, like, he doesn't really have that, like, freak athlete swagger or posture. You know what I mean? He just doesn't have that, like...
He's so friendly. He's got such, like, a welcoming face.
Yeah, that, like...
He doesn't even post Instagrams without his shirt on.
Yeah, his shirt's been on. But if you see him up close, you kind of realize, like, oh shit, this guy is, like... You know, if we had to throw down, he would, like, just destroy me right now. but he is just, it is like, I think about this all the time, how much of it's a shame that, you know, Princeton didn't have more success when he was there. Because, like, he is, like, that guy that, like, I want to see his quarterfinal moment. You know what I mean? I want to see his, like, goal that sends Princeton to the Final Four. You know, that, like, is just, it sucks so much that, you know,
right? It felt like he got no primetime games.
What was that?
Right. It felt like he got no primetime games during his college career.
If I had the balls, I would go back and watch it, but I'm not watching pre-shot clock era lacrosse for anything, but much less for this.
And it's funny because just, you know, with Team USA coming right now, you know, that first, you know, I'm struggling with the years, but the first tryout process when Tom Schreiber graduated Princeton. So he was just fresh out of college. I remember going to the tryouts and he did not have a good tryout and he was not selected for the team. And everyone basically agreed that, like, you know, he just didn't have it then. It's amazing how much that, like, you know, whatever blip on the radar that was, you know, just out of college, like, he has become the best player in the world. When you talk about the field box, you know, his ability to do both. He is, like, he's the ultimate pro. And, you know, if you have that weapon, and then, again, you combine that with a guy like Matt Moore, who just destroys people coming out of the box. And the thing that really impressed me, the Matt Moore, the shot that went, like, near pipe on Blaze, that, like, was just, like, I mean, there was just, like, a right. ball and a half of space, and it just kind of went in that spot. Oh man, that's just a team that, like, you know, I think the reason we were so critical of them last week is because we saw that, like, this could be the super team if they put it all together the right way. And I think we kind of started to see, like, what the pieces could do last week.
Which is so fascinating to see that Connor DeSimone, of all people, for faltering Johns Hopkins' offense throughout the season, is cracking the game they line up and playing and scoring goals. So
they got away with starting him at attack. They got away with him being guarded by Jack Rowlett the entire game.
Well, I was saying,
the defender of the year to guard Connor DeSimone for 60 minutes. Or however long these games are.
48 minutes.
Dan,
Connor DeSimone.
There were some questionable coaching decisions in your mind this past week. You just said one of them. What? I mean, like, you've been visibly upset every time you've been talking about this for the past week now.
This is the one that gets me. Like, they even gave themselves a chance down the stretch to, like, really make a push and win the game. And, like, Matt Moore is dodging short sticks with a full head of steam out of the box. And, like, Rowlett is guarding a rookie that, like, if you asked every coach who they would have rather added in the PLL draft part, like portion of this year, Matt Moore or Connor DeSimone, like, they're all taking Matt Moore. Like, I can't understand how you don't go to a double pull and bump him up to have a pull guarding him out of the box and get a short stick down guarding, you know, a midfielder from Hopkins that, like, I mean, he's a great player, don't get me wrong, but, like, I don't know, like, it's apples and oranges, at least to a degree.
The thing that was questionable to me was not getting the ball to Mac O'Keefe at the end of the game for a 2-point chance.
Also a interesting decision.
Goals who can shoot 2-pointers doesn't mean they always have to be the guy that shoots twos. You have the greatest 2-point shooter.
There was also no way that play was ever going to work because they had the guy that was leaving midfield start with the ball. So, like, once he had the ball on his stick and someone was guarding him and he passed it, like, it just – the spacing did not work the way that, like, he was imagining, I think, in his head. I think he was imagining, like, the first pull that picked it up or the first person that picked it up, like, being, like, deep in the corner – like towards the sideline, so that even if somebody was like shaded towards him and he went to the midfield, then Newman coming in on the other side, it would have been too like far of a gap to close. But in this instance, even if Newman catches it, he's guarded already. Like, meanwhile, you have the greatest shooter, potentially the best 2-point option in the league, is on your team. Like, use him.
Mac O'Keefe did not win the 2021 fastest shot competition.
That's true.
It's not the speed that matters. It's a lot of things that matter.
It's how you use it.
Yeah.
Wait for Carr did, and then Newman won in the shootout.
He's the actual fastest shot era.
What's that?
He's the Kyle Dixon of this era.
Yeah.
Mac O'Keefe. Which Kyle Dixon, I played against him in high school and was just like our team, we were bad. And like he would literally just pull up at like just over midline and just rip it. And just like,
not even high bouncers, just like straight into
it. Not even when you're getting 2 points for it.
Stick side high.
And it was just like ridiculous. Like in my head, at least my memory of it in my head is just like, it was like total like, weird underhand release, just like playing with us because we were terrible and we were just a bunch of like dirtbags anyway. We're taking runs at him and stuff, so he was just putting up points. But Mac O'Keefe has like got that same, like, you know, you give that guy the ball and like a millisecond and he can score from range. So he's the guy that I'm kind of putting the ball if I need a long ball. In that scenario, it's going to him. But
yeah, and to put my Patrick McEwen hat on, like, this is something he's advocated for, like, to find more set plays, to find time and room for those lethal shooters from beyond the arc is kind of the next step, the evolution of coaching at the pro level. So for those exact scenarios to kind of find whether it's coming over the top of like two picks like Steph Curry or what have you. It's got to find an innovative coach to unlock.
I think the best and the quickest spot we're going to start seeing it is EMO. Like, why would you set up like any sort of play that would lead to a step down that's from anywhere that's not from 2-point range while you're extra man? Like, I feel like that's going to be the evolution, is you're setting things up and you're creating plays that, like, you're telling him, like, take the space that you need to make sure you're catching and shooting this from two. There's no reason that, like, off of a step down or something like that while you're extra man. Like, the same shot that would go from you straddling the line or a step inside with your hands free on the step down is going to go from a yard or two deeper. Like, it's the same thing as in basketball. You never want to take deep twos. You never want to take deep ones. And I feel like this is the quickest way that you can start to implement that and start to kind of like orchestrate those and manufacture two balls is extra man.
I got to start watching basketball because.
Yeah, I'm all on the basketball comparisons right now. I guess it's just from because we are in the home stretch here of NBA playoffs, NBA finals.
Right. See, I'm a hockey guy, so it's like it's tough to watch both, you know? Like, there's just too many games, and like I'm a hockey guy, all in on hockey. Always loved hockey, but I don't think you guys lose me in these NBA discussions. Like, I know who Steph Curry is, but that's about like the extent of what I can contribute here.
That's cool.
what's everyone's predictions for this week?
You want to pull up some lines?
Yeah, so we got Water Rugs plus 1.5, Chrome minus 1.5. The Atlas minus 1.5 against the Whips. Archers minus 1.5. They're all, every game is 1.5.
Right.
Archers minus 1.5 and Redwoods minus 1.5.
It is so. So Redwoods are favored. Cannons are not favored, so the Archers are favored. I'm excited Redwoods, for the
Archers, Atlas, and Chrome are all favored, but every spread is 1.5.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So Atlas Whip Snakes is by far the most intriguing game for me. If the Water Dogs were healthy, that opener on Long Island would be a little more appetizing, but I think the Chrome handle the Water Dogs not easily, but I think they improved the 3-0 at least. And
Atlas, yeah, 1.5 feels light on the spread there, right? Am I crazy or
no? I wouldn't say, because if you think about it, so they played the majority of last season without Michael Sowers, and they got the one seed because they played like really good team offense. They spread the ball, and by the way, their midfielders were dodging last week with Jack Hanna getting a step on anyone who was guarding him, and Connor Kelly can step down, and if Zach Tucci's with him activated, Zach Carrier is going to be more involved offensively, I think. It'll definitely be closer than at least what you're initially thinking. But the Chrome are really good.
That's more so where my head is it's more a combination of that the Water Dogs aren't 100% because I think they need to be to, you know, really give the Chrome a good game here with how great they've been.
Well, I'm going to shift gears and say that, like, the one thing is, so Nick Osello wrote in the his piece this week about Career and how he wouldn't have had him taking all those faceoffs. I completely agree with that. That was the best point in the article that I thought.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Just that, like, don't take out one strength because you have another, you know.
I disagree.
Don't rule another part of the field because one field is already broken.
Kevin and I talked about this in the office, too. In addition to the Tom Shriver 2-pointer. But Kevin and I had opposite opinions in the office as well. I'm more with you, Matt. I wouldn't have used him for all.
But you chalk that up as a loss already. and just do everything else better.
Right. But so the stats are glaringly, so Nardella went 86%. Courier won 2 of 21 faceoffs, which is terrible. But Courier also helped cause a few turnovers right after Nardella would win. So when you have to go a little deeper, and I haven't done this, so I can't really format an argument to collectively here, but you know, it's, I think with, because Coach Jim Sagnita really credited Courier's effort on causing those turnovers after the faceoffs, really drew my attention to his impact in that area and was like, all right, maybe it was a little worth it to keep him out there. And
the other, get some, the other piece of ammo for your arsenal there is like, he never really got beat. Like, he was never getting smoke clean out the front, which, like, unless they were going to use a pole on that or something, like, there was a chance that any other short stick, right, if they were going to use a pole, like a D-mid or something like that, if they put them out there against Nardella in that situation, like, there's a chance that they just give up transition, and now, like, you know, you're adding insult to injury in that spot. But even with that as the possibility, I still wouldn't have used Courier for every single draw. Like, maybe for the first few, and if he's giving you chances there, and then you can, like, intermittently use him, but, like, I don't know. I think you probably could have chalked him off as losses quicker, and then, like, you at least have him as an option on offense more.
It's a tough decision, for sure. It really showcases just how shallow these game day rosters are. You know, 19 men are not a lot when you transition out of a college season that have 50-plus on the sideline.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just like, you throw as much junk at him as possible and rotate it around the roster. Is my, like, if your face-off guy goes down and you don't dress 2 face-off guys, you just kind of, like, you know, make every look a new look. And
the other thing that happened there when they did that was, and I couldn't, like, it was amazing. I've never met him, but, like, I kind of think that we need to have him on just to, like, give him praise for this. But Rylan Reese took literally every single wing for the entire rest of the game after the Withers injury, like, literally every single wing, which is just, like, he had to have been exhausted, you know, which is why, like, as a Water Dogs fan, when they ended up losing that game, like, I was, that was a tough one to swallow. They had done a lot of things and, like, and to deserve the win without actually ended up earning it.
But just to quickly hit on the other side, so Connor Farrell's been killing it facing off. Eli Salama has been awesome in transition. Nick Grill has played probably more than Salama up top, coming out of the box with Bernhardt, Giles Harrison, and Manley manning it down defensively. And the reason they're so good, and Joe Keegan would touch on this a lot last season, was because they're so slow to slide, and Tarasenko and Will Halls aren't giving anything up. Mike Messinger has been a great addition, aside from a little punch in the opening week, and Scannone with that little fedora has been awesome. But it's really the offense that we talked about last week that really gets my gears going, gets my gears grinding with Nick Turn and was now this, and you know, Dylan Malloy, if you're gonna throw those behind the back, since you know we love to see it.
Yeah, and your boy got hot. Your Chirp.
Oh, yeah. 5 goals after being held scoreless last week. None of them seemed too difficult on him. And, yeah, the Redwoods were just, they were deflated. But I am looking forward to, I think it'll be closer than people expect with the opener.
And then Atlas, like you said, it's the best game of the week. In terms of, you know, the team that's the clear best team right now and the team that is, like, the clear best, like, you know, it's like Maryland, you know, they're, like, the team that has just had the run of, like, consistent success in the Whipsnake. So, I don't know. I mean, like, if Zed was back, I think I'd flip flop. But I feel like you still got to take the Atlas in this.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm on the Atlas in this one.
Yeah.
Although, to your point earlier, Dan, about Coach Stagnita, like, I am more confident in him making it a one-goal game. Still a loss. Still Atlas winning. But just, like, him doing something that makes it a game that is decided in the last 45 seconds as opposed to, like, you know, a game where Atlas are winning by four late and just kind of finishes like that.
Well, what percentage do you think Nardella would have to finish to make that scenario come true?
I don't know, man. Nardella is good, and, like, he just has these games sometimes where you're just like, what in the world?
Right. Which I think, like, this is the perfect example of a game that he will do that. Baptiste is absolutely killing it. No one would expect Nardella to win the matchup. I'm talking myself into a whips pick here. I'm thinking. But Dwight, like, Cole was really fun to watch.
He doesn't need to win the matchup. He just needs to not get, you know, like, he needs to win 40% and, you know, let this awesome team do their job. Like, you know, so much of the faceoff is just like, you just don't want to get killed. You know what I mean? You just don't want to make it where your defense is like.
You don't want to get killed, and you want one juice goal. You want one. Yeah. Popping forward, skip it to Jay Carlson. He'll get a little leaner, quick stick over to Gutty to cut the deficit to one.
I'm like, Nardella is like as good as anyone at doing that. Like, you know, he's the best offensive faceoff guy there is right now.
I'm slowly convincing myself on the whips, but ultimately, I think I'm staying Atlas, but, I mean, it's also one of your kind of classic, like, best offense versus best defense situations, where if you look at, like, the total defense in terms of transition defense and settled defense, that, like, you know, the whip stakes are pretty good when you, like, average those out. And then Nardella at the X, like, I don't think that Baptiste is going to be like he may win the battle there, but he's not going to be turning all those wins into like points as well as possessions. And so I can see him having an impact there and like really forcing the Atlas to try and score a whole bunch of settled goals against the whips because they're unsettled defense is pretty good. They're pretty disciplined. They don't foul a whole ton, you know, like all these types of things kind of factor their way. Whereas right now the Atlas have been scoring in abundance of ways, be it EMO, be it transition, or like off the faceoff, like they're scoring in an abundance of ways right now. And I could see the Whips doing the best job so far this season of making those score settled goals. And then it's just a matter of if they can get the stops and saves that they need to capitalize on that. And we talked about the stats report earlier. Right now, the Whips defense is currently the fourth settled defense, but if you average it out, they're the second. So, like we said, they'll probably be able to do what they need to do to get into settled sets against the Atlas. It's just a matter of how many stops and saves they can get once they do get there.
Yeah, then I think second best game is the first game on Saturday with the ABC game here with Cannons Archers. We already touched on the Archers' weapons a bunch, but and talking to Asher and his fit into the offense, it'll be interesting to see if Lyle can give it a go or not. But it's an interesting dynamic between Asher finding his role between coming out of the box and not, and kind of Ryan Drenner doing whatever it takes to help out with either driving poles from around X to get top side or finding some off ball movement when he's coming out of the box. So I don't know. I think Archers probably win that one easily. I'll say 3 or 4 goal Archers win.
I don't know. I don't feel that. I feel like this Canon seems pretty tough. Like, I just don't think they're going to, like, I think it's going to be a one-goal game. I'm going to go with Canons on this one. They lose by a goal.
I think I'm going to take the Archers to win, but it'll be pretty close. And I can see the Canons having, like, kind of a similar start where they, like, start hot and the offense is kind of rolling. And maybe whatever they decide to roll out is their initial game plan. It's working at first. But once that, like, first element of it goes away and they don't have that, like, secondary, okay, what do we do here? Let's give the ball to Lyle, send him a pick, and, like, move off of it. Things kind of, like, start to stall out a little bit after that. And so, I don't know. I could see kind of what you're saying, Matt. And, like, I definitely don't see it being a Archers blowout. But I could see but I think I'm on the Archers to win it in a close game.
I'm deferring to our awesome guest, Asher Nolting. Giving him some love. It's gonna be I'm taking the bet on the Canons. I'm not a betting man, but
a Canons win and an Asher Nolting 5-point performance on 3-2.
I just gotta give him more bulletin board material. It'll be interesting to see if so the PLL coaches are hopeful that the Canadian rookies will be available. Whether or not that'll be true remains to be seen. But the face-off specialist rookie for Archers, Justin Nacio, I think has a good chance in kind of helping things not get out of hand versus Stephen Kelly. And if he's not good to go, then the Canons do have, I think, a lot better of a chance to either win by one, like you said, Matt, or win by a couple.
Uh-oh, he's backtracking off the Archers big.
Nah, I'm just adding some context and caveats. But let's go to this last game here before you get any more trouble. Redwoods Chaos. I think Redwoods get back.
Because I called this the toilet bowl earlier.
And you're right to do so. So, the only problem I have with picking the Redwoods to get back on track is the fact that the strength of Chaos, this current iteration of them, is defense. Jack Rowlett, Blaze Reardon still available, and they've got other defensive core intact. But I don't know. Like, I just don't see them not being able to come out of a 3-goal game, the worst scoring output in PLL history, and not being like not having the fire under their bellies to like absolutely kill it the next week.
I'm going Redwoods in this one. I think TD is going to feast in this game. I think him having a subpar outing last week, then going into a matchup where he can do well. I think TD's going to do awesome. I think the Redwoods going to get some more chance. Maybe they're a little healthier than they were a week ago. I don't know that for a fact. I am curious with the, like, you know, Sergio Salcido added to the mix. Just like that speed. I feel like, Dan, you're like getting upset as I'm talking about it this year. But I love Salcido's game. I think like just his speed is just an element that like is one of those like you can't teach speed, you know. That's something that is an X factor that you have to consider. I'm going with him.
I can't pick the Redwoods until two out of the three attackmen sweat during a game. I'm pretty sure that has not happened yet this season. That at least at any given time, two out of the three Redwoods attackmen are just like not even like sweating, like not running, not riding, not dodging, not like literally just taking up a roster spot. Like until that happens, I can't take a Redwoods pick. So therefore, I'm on the Chaos, and hopefully those defenders are salivating after losing last week. Like you mentioned that the Redwoods had that awful offense performance, and that is true. The Chaos are off a loss too, and they're you know, hungry for that first win. And obviously, you know, a lot of their roster is missing, but the guys that they're playing are looking to prove themselves and looking to, you know, make a name for themselves. And, you know, some of them know that they're holding spots and, you know, this is kind of their opportunity to make a name for themselves for when those guys get back to maybe end up on a different roster by the end of the season. Therefore, I'm on the Chaos.
Yeah. Jalen Rodgers is one, super swaggy, two, very fun to watch, three, he had one of the best pro goals I've seen when the two bubbles overlapped with, or not overlapped, but the MLL bubble preceded the PLLs with his cannons goal from like almost 2-point range on the Shane Jackson or the Kyle Jackson assist. They're linking back up together, so it'll be fun. They've got some new pieces, but we'll see if they can put it in the back of the net consistently.
One thing, you know, all this talk about the Bandits and, you know, the Chaos and Bandits overlap, I feel like the guy that doesn't get mentioned is Max Adler, and like he's killing it right now indoor as well.
Yeah,
like
that's a really good point.
The dude is just like, he just plays in, he's played in championship game every year he's been a pro. It's unbelievable. You just like, you get that guy on your roster and you are in the championship game. Like, I just like, and he's like the transition, you know, I know he, you know, him and Nardella work a lot together in off seasons. And, you know, Nardella was the guy who kind of like went into the box arena and it made him such a better field faceoff specialist, his play in box. And now Max is doing the same thing, playing with the Bandits, got his shot, and, you know, he's making the most of it. I think when he comes back, he's going to be like, he's going to be a difference maker at the faceoff position for Chaos. You know, he's going to be a guy that's like, this box experience, you know, I don't like, for some reason, people just don't like associate the faceoff position as being like the same way that Tom Schreiber got better at field by playing box. Like, I don't think people necessarily associate the faceoff guys getting better.
I feel like a decent amount, like, but he's the only example I can think of him being like, yeah, like playing box, like, I mean, and you've seen it. He's probably the most explosive face-off guy with the ball and the stick in the league right now.
Yeah. So just something to watch, you know, for obviously the coming weeks, you're talking about this offense coming back, but they're also getting a guy that's like, you know, and again, the box, like we talked about last week, the box season is long. You know, I think it's going to take 2 weeks after these guys get back to, like, you know, let the bruises heal a little bit because that's such a rough sport. But, you know, they're not only going to have an awesome offense, but they're going to get the ball a ton too.
Yeah, that's more so than any other game I think we've touched on. This one, I think, is the biggest toss-up because we just don't know which version of the Redwoods offense, whether it's the version we saw week two or, I mean, they showed glimpses in week one, but not much. Whether they show up in week three or
this is my official call for the Redwoods to give the keys to Jules.
Mm-hmm. Give
the keys to Jules. I mean, there's no one fix, obviously, but I feel like that helps. And I really feel like right now they've done so much like top down initiating, which another one of the really cool things that of the stuff that Joe sent us is initiation zones, and they're like towards the bottom, like very bottom when it looks at like right wing and like low right corner stuff compared to like high above the 2-point line, like getting down the alley type stuff and sweeps. And I really think that they kind of would be well served to switch it. Let Jules go and initiate things down below. Send him a pick if you need to, whatever. Let him initiate things. Pinnell's working off of it behind, below GLE, you know, at X. And then you have those midfielders working behind it to then kind of attack approaches. Or, you know, if there's bad closeouts, now you have some 2-point range. Like, I really feel like for that offense to get going, that would be a good look, good fix for them. And at least an alternate look rather than all this, like,
top down dodging with midfielders and looking for like quick passes to the attackman for shots.
What did I say last week that I feel like Jules has never really gotten his like full shot?
It's time.
Jules time.
Jules time. Give him the keys, baby.
Can I give three absolute locks for player props to send us off? Transitioning into that, I think. So Jules, over 2.5 points. Mortal lock. Banking in.
Whoa. I was saying that's what should happen, what I would do. I'm not 100% convinced that it is what's
going to happen. Oh, I am. I'm convinced. Because I'm picking the Redwoods, so it's going to have to happen if that's going to be the case.
I will say if the Redwoods win, you're probably safe that Jules had Jules was plus 2.5.
I'm going to go with the over on Matt Moore 2.5. There's a lock here.
Nick Turn over 2.5 is looking real spicy as well.
Yeah, it's I'm just deciding between Nick Turn 2.5 or Wisnowskis 3.5 because I don't think both hit.
Right.
But one does.
Well, both could hit. Both could definitely hit. I think the most interesting one is Eric Law at 3.5. That's probably the best line in terms of I'm not sure if I want to really give him bet on him getting 4 points, but he can put up 4 points in a hurry.
Eric Law's career is just awesome.
Yeah.
Rambo only 2.5. I feel like you got to take that. I feel like that. I think like you can overthink it. Like Rambo is one of the best players in the league. Like 2.5 points. Like dude can do that in his sleep. You know, like yeah, like maybe like it. Well, like him and Jake Carlson have the same prop bet, and this is not like Jake Carlson's the most underrated player in the league, potentially. But like, I mean, Rambo's just a dominant force. You got to take that bet over Rambo. First blood. Here we go.
I'm all about it.
I kind of like the take. I'll go hot take for this, and I'll say 2 lock, both Wisnowskis and Nick Turn. I say it hits for both of them.
Nick Turn passing to Wisnowskis.
Yep, they'll connect with each other at least once or twice, so they'll steal one that way. But I think they're going to have a ton of possessions. Farrell's been hot. Tucci coming in. Like, I mean, I kind of feel like I, like, want to give edges to players that are obviously, like, fresh out of their college career. You're in the prime of your, like, shape. It's the best shape you've probably ever been in your life. And, like, off of your spring, your stick is in the best like dialed condition that it's ever been in probably. And so like there's a chance that he's ready to roll and can come in and, you know, really fight it out and win them a bunch of possessions. But my hunch is that Farrell's experience and size is going to be enough to get them the ball a bunch. And so I'm going a little bit hotter on my prop locks and saying take both Wisnowskis and Nick Turn to hit on theirs.
Dan, have you played on Long Island before and or Hofstra?
I've never been in Long Island before.
You just never been there, like, at all?
In it?
I don't think I have either.
On Long Island, not in.
I've been in New York and on Long Island and in Long Island. I'm just kidding. I'm making in and on jokes, and I've been there. I don't know what I'm saying.
But I'm psyched. Can't wait for these games.
Hofstra is an awesome place to watch lacrosse. Like I saw the greatest game ever possibly there with Notre Dame versus Albany in the quarterfinals. So I'm a little bit biased.
Sick brag.
But I remember that place. At one point I went down into the stands from the press box late in that game. And just like, it was like the place was shaking. Like it was so awesome. Both fan bases were so great that year. And then the Maryland Virginia game from the 2019 season. Oh my gosh, it seems so long ago with the pandemic. I'm getting confused, but
yeah, crossbar goal.
Yeah, that game was awesome, and then you know, and this year even as well, I was up there for that. Hofstra's an awesome place to watch lacrosse, and they do a great job up there. So, gonna be a lot of fans. You know, I love seeing, you know, and I talked last week about like you love seeing the first time venues, but there is also something special about the back to back Long Island and Homewood Field. There's just gonna be a lot of lacrosse people watching these games, and that's awesome. So hopefully the ABC crowd is really good.